Diverse, independent, yours. You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, British Columbia.
Kevin Sims will be telling us about the Canadian Deafblind Association. So, if you could each introduce yourselves and tell me a little bit about the Deafblind Association, that'd be great.
Carolyn, you go ahead. You want me to... My name is Carolyn Monaco, and I'm the president of Canadian Deafblind Association, at the national level. And we have three chapters right now. We've been in existence since 1975, and so we're celebrating our 50th year this year. National's role is more one of networking across the country and supporting our chapters and our members. We don't deliver direct intervener services, the chapters do that. But we certainly try to support them and our members in any way we can.
So, can you give me a bit of an overview of some of the supports you do provide at the intervention level?
We can do that. Leanne, you want to introduce yourself as well and go on to Saskatchewan, and then I'll talk about New Brunswick.
Okay. So, I'm Leanne Kerr. I'm the Executive Director for the Canadian Deafblind Association, Saskatchewan Chapter Incorporated. We are located in Saskatoon. We run residential and day program services for individuals who are deafblind. Currently we have three homes, residential homes, and then we provide day programming for 11 individuals within those homes. We don't have a building that we go to. We kind of use our community as our day program, so the individuals really do have a lot of choice and option in their life as to how they want to live it, where they want to go, what they want to spend their time doing, who they want to spend their time with. Typically during the daytime hours, each of the individuals that we support has a one-on-one intervener. So an intervener is sort of the person that mediates between the individual who's deafblind and their outside world. So they help sort of bring that information to the individual. Because of the loss of the vision and the hearing, they do have challenges understanding what their environment even consists of. So we have one-on-one staff interveners so that they can participate in whatever it is that they want to do. So if they want to work, the intervener helps in the system to get to work and be productive in their workday. If they don't want to go to work and they want to go for coffee, they want to go swimming, they want to go to a movie, whatever it happens to be, they get to lead and direct their day and what it looks like. So those are kind of the services that we provide here in Saskatchewan.
So... Kevin.
And my name is Kevin Sims, and I'm the Executive Director for the Canadian Blind Association in New Brunswick. We have currently 47, I believe, full-time clients with 50 interveners that we have across the province. We also support individuals in PEI as well. And much like Saskatchewan, we have one-on-one with our clients with an intervener. We do have individuals that actually work at different places, like Sobeys, for example, or some of the other places in New Brunswick, businesses. They're there supported by their intervener, so they work together. We actually, at CDPA in New Brunswick, we actually have one of our clients and her intervener. Wiener works in our Fredericton office, and so she is works as admin support, and she does all kinds of things in the office that support the other staff that work in the office. We also have clients that have volunteer positions such as SPCA and a number of different places. We get involved with the Poppy campaign with the veterans. Sometimes we, in Bathurst in different cities, we have our interveners and our clients work with them to support their campaign. I just think of that because of the time of year we're starting to organize that now, so it's something that's current. But yeah, so we have interveners and clients that do numerous things, both volunteer and actual work.
So in your efforts, do you ever encounter any myths or misperceptions about deafblindness?
Yeah, that's a loaded question. Well, I mean, a lot of the myth is that that they're unable to partake in our community and do work such as volunteering and work, which is not accurate. With the support of interveners, they are able to integrate into our system, into our society. And Carolyn, I'm sure she can give you a couple examples. We have people who are deafblind who actually teach, or is he retired now? I'm not sure. But Carolyn can probably expand on that as well, about how deafblind people, and Penny is another good example of people who are deafblind that are actively both lobbying, advocating for people with deafblindness.
I'd love to hear more about teachers.
Like Gilio and Penny. Maybe you can talk, Carolyn, because you know them a lot better than we do. You have a lot more interaction and history with those two individuals, just for examples.
Yeah, I think probably anybody who works in the field of deafblindness would say that our best teachers are those individuals who are deafblind. They've taught us far more than we've probably given to them, just as a field in as a whole. But certainly there are a number of individuals who are deafblind who are in paid teaching roles that are either teaching often the communication, various communication systems that are used with deafblind people. Georgetown College in Toronto does employ individuals who are deafblind in their intervener program who teach students about their lived experience as well as the communication systems.
So in your work, is there any success moment or story that stands out for each of you you'd like to share?
We have lots of successes on a daily basis, and sometimes our successes are pretty small in comparison to some, you know, other people's large successes. But I even think of one of the individuals that we support. So this individual is totally deaf, totally blind, sees nothing, hears nothing. All of his communication is done hand in hand. He uses physical tactile cues. And so the one day he was getting dressed, and I had worked with him for many years at that point in time, and I knew that he was very capable of doing a lot of things on his own, and he had dropped his sock. And instantly, my first thought was, I need to go get the sock, because how is he ever going to find the sock? And he took his hand, he ran it down his leg, or first of all, he used his foot, found the sock on the floor with his toes, then he ran his hand down his leg and picked up his sock and put his sock on, and I thought, wow, all of the years of, you know, teaching the independence and you can do it yourself and over and over trying to instill that in him, and it worked, right? It wasn't, he didn't need me to find his sock. He could do it on his own, and I think it would have been demeaning to him for me to do it for him rather than let him do it for himself. So some of those successes seem pretty small, but it was pretty big in his day that he could do that on his own.
Are there any others? Kevin, do you have anything you want to share?
Well, there was all kinds of different, like, people out there that we've worked with that have, you know, accomplished their goals. We work with the social workers, the family, and sit down as a group and the client, and we, you know, determine what the outcomes are that everybody's looking for. I mean, just one recently I can think of, we have an individual that graduated from high school and living with his parents. And as any young man, I know I was, kind of wanted my independence from my parents. So with our intervener working with him, and again, this client is deafblind, working with the intervener, we kind of got him into community, got him going, you know, got him interacting outside into the community, and we had found an apartment for him. And he's now living independently in the apartment with support. So, I mean, the goals for his family was more independence, and the goal for the social worker was more independent. And I don't think you could be more independent than living on your own in an apartment. That's pretty independent. So he's doing well with supports from his family and from CDBA as well. And there's other ones. I mean, when it comes to communication, we work with a young fella that was deaf, autistic, had some vision issues, and had some behavioral issues. We started working with him when he was 7. And the big behavior issues was because he was, what's the word I'm looking for? He was agitated all the time because he had no form of communication. So we started working with signs, like as in sign language, but we don't teach sign language. We work on just the sign kind of sign part of it. And, you know, teaching him what the sign for bathroom was and realizing that if he made that sign, somebody took him to the bathroom. That simple. And that agitation started slowly going away because as we'd worked with him over the last 10 years, he's developed a whole repertoire of signs that he can use to get his emotions or to get his feelings across to what he wants to do. So, I mean, it's just simple things like that. To him, you know, those signs, those actions make a huge impact on his life. But overall for us, it's just part of our job. That's why we're here, is to, you know, try to find the key to communication and integration into the community and what works. And sometimes we have to work on, do a couple different things. We use the computers sometimes to help with their communication. Sometimes we use calendars. Sometimes we'll use texts. You know, it all depends on what the situation is and the individual. And it's just, a lot of it is trial and error to find what works for them and then how we can expand it, right?
Right. Thank you all for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yep.
Andy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Last night, you went out drinking, and you did the right thing. You left the car at home. Thank you. But even though you slept, do you think you're okay to drive? If you drank a lot the night before, you could still be intoxicated. Only time, not a cold shower, a hot coffee, or a big meal can lower your blood alcohol concentration. Plan ahead for your night out and the next morning. You'll be helping to keep our roads safe. A message from SmartServe Ontario and Arrive Alive, Drive Sober.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Carolyn Monaco, Kevin Sims, and Leanne Kerr told us a little bit about the Canadian Deafblind Association. In this segment of our show, Rob Etoff will be telling us a little bit about Easter Seals. So, can you tell me a little bit about Easter Seals Canada and your work therein?
Yes, absolutely. Easter Seals is Easter Seals Canada, and Easter Seals is the largest local provider of programs and services and issues leadership and development for the disability community, serving all ages and all disabilities. And in short, it's really our focus here at Easter Seals Canada is really three parts. One is to champion the rights of persons with disabilities. to ensure that every individual is valued and empowered, and also to raise awareness and to finally to support our provincial partners in their delivery of vital and programs and services for the disability community.
So, are there any common trends among the needs of folks with disabilities that you serve?
Yes, I think for sure. While we serve a wide audience, there are certainly some common trends, and that forms a part of the advocacy work that we've been doing with various different partners, but certainly in partnership with the government. I think, first of all, socioeconomic needs of this group, while not all are impacted, there's certainly the disability community forms around 27% of the population of Canada, and within that population, there is certainly an increasing number that are impacted by socioeconomics and by poverty. So that's of course a concern. And, you know, related to that would be things like, affordable medication, affordable housing. So these are all areas that we stress and we advocate for on behalf of the disability community.
It's funny you mention about socioeconomic factors. It's my understanding that things like the Access to card are something that can really help with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that is one of our very popular national programs running out of the national office. And it's actually surprising because often when I'm engaging with those in the public, there still isn't quite the awareness that we would appreciate for this program. It's been around for about just over 20 years or so. And in essence, what the program is if you have a permanent disability, you have the opportunity to apply for this card. And we have over 800 partners now, our largest venue being Cineplex Theatres. And as long as you have a healthcare provider who can authorize that you have a permanent disability, you can apply for one of these cards, which essentially gets you, if I have a disability and I'm going to the movies, I would pay for my ticket, but the individual who would be with me to help support me in that environment. Let's say it's a friend, it's a spouse, it's a some sort of care worker. They would get in for free, and so the purpose of this program is to ensure that that those who have accessibility needs are being active and engaged. In the public in many different ways. So this has been a highly popular program. We have around 100,000 cardholders currently and about 800 different venues that are on board, and we're looking to continue to promote this across the disability community.
So in your time working with Easter Seals, has there been any success moment or story that stands out for you you'd like to share?
Well, I think for sure one of our best-kept secrets is our 14 fully accessible camps that literally are spread out coast to coast, right across Canada and are run through our various different provincial affiliates and partners. And I had the opportunity this past summer to visit a number of them, and some of that put various different posts out on my social media feed, kind of trying to tell the story of the magic of camp. It's a real gift for these individuals and for their families, and really providing vital services. While we, at Easter Seals Canada want to be a catalyst for change to advance an inclusive society where all persons with disabilities can readily, integrate and participate. Unfortunately, we know that is not the reality, and it certainly isn't the reality for many of our youth who want to access these life-changing programs that are offered throughout the year, but primarily during the summer. And so we do have these camps that create these spaces for these youth, and in order to teach them all the incredible skills that any other individual would get out of those experiences, independence, resilience, you know, setting goals for myself and working towards achieving them. The other thing that's, I think, less known about the program is the vital respite that it provides to the families. Many of the youth that are attending our camps are obviously high-care individuals. You know, the families are on board, parents are on board with looking after these individuals. You know, it's a 24/7, you know, 365 days a year. Them being at camp with us provides these families with the opportunity to have that much-needed respite. That's something that we try to convey to the government in terms of the value. This isn't just about going away and these youth having fun. This is about providing vital social services that are not being picked up by various different government institutions.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. In this segment of our show, Barb Schuberg will be telling us a little bit about Delta wheelchair vans. So if you could introduce yourself and tell me a little bit about Delta wheelchair vans, that'd be great.
Sure. So my name is Barb Schuberg. I live out in North Delta, BC. It's a suburb of Vancouver, about maybe 40 minutes from the city center. And so we've been renting wheelchair vans for about 15 years. So people come out here to our Lake Hippo location, or we can deliver. It's really up to the individual.
So what are some of the most common adaptations made to a vehicle in your experience?
Well, we run just the one tank, which is the side entry where the wheelchair user sits right next to the driver. And so meaning there's no front passenger seat, those are removed. And so then that way the wheelchair user can just sit right next to the driver and be up there at the front rather than in the back.
I take it the vans themselves include, like, harnesses for the chair.
You do, yes. All the vans come with 4 keystrain tie-downs, which are kind of the easiest to load. They ratchet, so you don't have to ratchet them yourself. And, it's a really simple system and very safe.
So how do you reach out to folks with disabilities to let them know that, that you are an option for them?
So we do have a website, deltawheelchairvans.com, and we also advertise a little bit with the SCIBC, and otherwise mostly word of mouth, and also through, like here at the local rehab facility, all the OTs know us, and the local spinal cord injury websites. And also, organizations know about us, so a lot of word of mouth.
So, I'd imagine that there are some serious advantages for someone with limited mobility being able to get access to one of your vans and getting them around.
Yeah, absolutely, especially in a city like Vancouver, where everything is really spread out, and there aren't really a lot of options for public transportation, unless you want to spend hours and hours, on the buses or the SkyTrain. So yeah, that's a big advantage to be able to just sort of go out, you know, whenever you need to, or if you have specific appointments, or if you want to get out of town as well. So yeah, it really is a big advantage over having to use public transport.
So, do you ever get vans brought to you that need to be modified to include a wheelchair van?
We do have people who ask us about that. We're not capable of doing that at all, but we can kind of direct them to there are 2 or 3 local places that do make those adaptations. You know, they've got the industrial facilities to do that, so we can certainly direct people to where they need to go. If that's the option that they're looking for.
Are there ever any challenges in maintaining the ramps themselves?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Yeah, no, that's a huge challenge. I think anybody who owns a wheelchair van can attest, but they are fairly problematic, so you have to maintain them quite thoroughly. So that luckily we've got, a couple of really good places here where we can take them to get regular maintenance. But, they do eventually all break down. You have to kind of deal with that as it comes, and it is a kind of expensive process. So yeah, but it's probably one of the main challenges of the business is making sure that everything's working properly. You can try to you can do all the maintenance, but in the world and things still go wrong, or sometimes you those ramps that you think aren't going to give you any trouble, like the manual ramps, even those can give you trouble, so you really got to stay on top of that.
So, in your time providing vans for those in wheelchairs and those who need transportation access, is there any success story or moment you'd like to share?
Yeah. It's kind of everyday moments. Often a relative will tell you that they haven't been able to get their mom or dad out of a care home, say, for years and years. So they share a small moment where, their loved one was able to get out and to see some of their old haunts. So it's not really a big moment like that, it's really meaningful in its own way because, I've got a spinal cord injury myself where I've spent long periods of time in the hospital. And so I really understand that feeling of, that importance of being able to get out. And, sorry about that. Another phone going down. So there's no one particular moment, but just a lot of those smaller when loved ones tell you that you've made a big difference in the lives of someone who, maybe hasn't been able to get out very much. So that means a lot.
So, as someone with a disability yourself, do you think that's had an impact or helped shape your desire to be of service in this way?
Yeah, absolutely. I think anyone with a spinal cord injury struggles with that, that sense of purpose and, wanting to still fulfill, an important function in society. So, absolutely. When you have that personal experience of maybe feeling, down or a little bit, not necessarily depressed, but a little bit negative about the world. So it always helps to have some sort of purpose or daily activity.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Thanks. So, my friends, I'm just floored by the story of the deafblind individual who was able to find his socks. Honestly, it's a testament the fact that a person with a disability can and will achieve if given the right circumstances, and even the right training. People with disabilities use their senses and their abilities in many different ways. Just to assume that a person doesn't understand or perceive the world because they don't understand and perceive the world the same way we do is awfully short-sighted, if you ask me. But it's always uplifting to see that a person can and will thrive. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.
CJSF is 90.1 FM, broadcasting from the heights of Burnaby Mountain.